This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. You ever get the feeling the labor market is just messing with us? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday, today the fourth day of February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. All right, I was kidding. I don't actually think the labor market is messing with us, but I will tell you what, there is some weird stuff going on. Most everybody, yours truly included, thought for sure the January jobs report that we got this morning was going to be not so great. Omicron, right? Businesses closed, people not able to work because they had to take care of themselves or others. That was the vibe. Turns out the vibe, don't know nothing. 467,000 new jobs last month. November and December revised up by 700,000. Wages were up. So, too, was the unemployment rate. But that was good news. More people coming back into the labor force. In fact, what is called the labor force participation rate, basically how many adults are working or looking for work, bumped up to 62.2%, a random number I know, but it's the highest it's been since the pandemic started. There is a lot to cover in this morning's jobs report and what it might portend, so we will begin with Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman on LFPR.
A direct comparison to December's data is a little problematic because the Bureau of Labor Statistics adjusts the numbers it reports every January. But Harvard economist Jason Furman says it is good news that labor force participation keeps recovering so strongly after the dive it took early in the pandemic.
Because one of the big problems in the economy has been that people haven't been looking for jobs. Now they're looking for jobs and getting jobs.
All this could be good news for employers struggling to find employees in this tight labor market, says Daniel Zhao at JobSite Glassdoor.
We have seen this steady flow of workers back into the labor force, back into employment. Now, that doesn't mean it's easy for employers to hire, but it does say that the job market recovery has been very healthy over the course of the last year.
This recovery hasn't been as strong for people of color and women. Emily Martin at the National Women's Law Center points out that because of family responsibilities and the big hit service industries took in the pandemic, their labor force participation is still depressed.
If you took into account the folks who have left the labor force completely, women's unemployment rate, instead of being 3.6%, would be 5%. For Black women, the unemployment rate would be 7.3% instead of 5.8%.
On the flip side, January's jobs report showed a big increase in participation for one demographic, says University of Michigan economist Betsy Stevenson.
The real impact here was on workers 55 years and over, where we saw a larger share of older people are working than we originally thought.
The worry has been that a lot of older workers left jobs because of COVID or fear of getting COVID and might not come back. Turns out fewer of them left the workforce to begin with. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
It's not just me who thinks this morning's unemployment report was weird, by the way. 5:37 this morning, that's West Coast time, at Gina Smilek on Twitter. This is a very weird jobs report. That's a quote. Bizarre. So that is where we'll start the next 7.5-ish minutes of this program. Gina's at the New York Times. Brian Chung is at Yahoo Finance. Hey, you two.
Hey, it's okay.
I was paying attention to your Twitter, Gina. I always do. Why weird? Lay it out for me.
Right. So it was a much bigger jobs gain than people expected. And it was a really solid earnings number as well. Average hourly earnings were up very high. But at the same time, there were a lot of people on temporary layoff because of the pandemic, which is, you know, that part is what everyone expected. But everyone expected that to mean that we had a really weak jobs growth number this month. And that obviously didn't pan out. And so I think, you know, you had to kind of dig into the numbers and see what was going on. It's like there's some quirkiness around people not getting laid off after the holidays the way they usually would. But it just made everything look very unusual. Very strong, but very unusual.
Brian, also strong, those revisions from November and December up 700,000. It has been a rough stretch for the BLS this pandemic as they try to figure out how to measure things. Well, maybe Brian's not there. So, Gina, I'm going to throw the same question to you then. What do we do with this when the BLS sort of, I mean, they're not missing, right? Because it's super hard to begin with measuring a workforce of 163 million or so people. But these revisions, I mean, what are we supposed to do with that?
Yeah, it has been tough. It's been a tough time to sort of assess any kind of economic data. It's all been a little all over the place. But I think the labor market report is just such a huge production every month that it has been particularly susceptible to some of this weirdness, especially because, you know, at the household survey level, you're dealing with people responding to questionnaires. And at the establishment survey level, so the number that the unemployment rate comes from, or the number that the headline list numbers come from, that one, you have to deal with companies responding to questions. And so people answer wrong, you get misclassification, and it's just been a real mess. So it's been, I think, one of those times Jay Powell, the Fed chair, likes to use the word humble a lot right now, and I think we all have a little, his favorite word du jour, and I think it's a good one for the data.
That's right. All right, were he still with us, I was going to ask Brian about an interview he did with Rafael Bostic, the head of the Atlanta Fed, either this week or late last week, frankly, I forget. Brian, if you're listening, I apologize. But Bostic said, look, maybe a half percentage point increase is on the table for this March meeting in the federal funds rate. Gina, what do you think?
Right. Brian freaked everybody out with that interview. But so Bostic kind of clarified this week, actually. And he said that, yeah, he definitely thinks half a percentage point increase, which is basically a double-sized, jumbo-sized rate increase, could be on the radar going forward. But he doesn't think it's the right call for March. That said, after today's jobs numbers, a lot of economists are thinking that the Fed might revisit that because wage growth looks just so strong that maybe they'll, you know, reconsider and do that half point increase in March.
Don't you think, though, that that would freak everybody out more? Because the Fed has been so deliberate in its communications. And look, Powell has said, in essence, in diplomatic speak, he said, everything's on the table. We're going to wait to see what the data says. But don't you think if they bumped it a half percentage point, 50 basis points, people would go bananas?
I think it's going to be interesting. You know, if they decide they want to do that, they do have a couple more weeks to communicate that they're doing it before it happens. And so the idea could be that, you know, you let markets adjust to the idea. I think there is also something to be said for at a time of high inflation, and we haven't had one of these in such a long time that I think people forget, but there is this theory that goes that at a time of high inflation, it's okay to surprise markets a little bit because the idea is to tighten financial conditions, you know, to make credit harder and to slow things down. And so it does seem like they've had less sensitivity to surprising markets recently than they had, I think, in the entirety of the time that I've covered the Fed.
Totally. Through the miracle of modern telecommunications, I think we got Brian Chung back. Brian on the phone?
I'm here.
All right, good. I don't know how much of that you heard. We talked about the half percentage point hike that Bostic laid out in that interview with you. I want to ask you about the rest of the year. There are 8 meetings, and there is some talk out there that maybe every single meeting is live. That is to say, they could raise rates every single time this year. What do you think?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting just because headed into this year, the expectation was that the Fed might only hike 3 times during the year. But I think what we've learned is that inflation has come up well above not only everyone's average expectations, but the policymakers inside the ivory tower of the Fed, too. And that's what the kind of gist of the official speak since the last meeting last week has been, is that inflation has indeed stuck around longer than they feel is comfortable. That's a big reason why they've messaged they want to start tightening policy. Now, markets are trying to figure out exactly what that means. Does that mean 3? Does that mean 4? Does that mean 5? Does that mean 7 interest rate hikes? Does that mean 50 basis point moves instead of the standard 25 basis point moves in each of those moves? And I think that that's something that markets are trying to figure out. Of course, Fed officials won't try to put a number on it because they don't want back themselves into committing to a specific policy. That's right. Something that Chair Powell actually wanted to leave on the table last week, is the optionality for policy this year.
Right. Gina, there's a phrase that came to my mind the other day that you haven't seen out there much, but I suspect we're going to see it a bunch in the next couple of weeks and months. Soft landing, right? That's what the Fed is trying to engineer here. Get the economy less exuberant, shall we say, without causing recession.
I think that that is definitely what they want to do. I think that, you know, you increasingly talk to economists who say it's going to be a tough lift because inflation's pretty high. Everyone expects it to fade, but nobody knows when. And you could really see a situation where the Fed starts hiking just as inflation fades and everything slows down all at once. You could also see a situation where they don't hike fast enough and inflation just continues to take off. And so I think they're trying to sort of balance all of these myriad risks and not sort of, you know, end the party before really getting started.
Right.
And so I think it's going to be a real question whether they can pull it off this year.
Brian, it's worth pointing out here that the recovery we have had so far has been a result of fiscal policy, that is to say relief from the government, just straight up money, and also monetary policy, that is to say interest rates and other support from the Federal Reserve. Got to point out here that even though the economy's growing and doing real nice, those two supports for this economy are now effectively done, and we're kind of on our own.
Well, and that's one reason for perhaps why we might not see that more aggressive 50 basis point move in the March meeting. And again, markets might tell you something a little bit different. There's the expectation that either way you cut it or slice it, the economy is going to grow slower than it has during the last 2 years, some point this year. And you don't want to be pulling all of that support during that time, especially knowing there's a monetary policy lag, as Gina was kind of laying out in that last answer. So the timing of all this is going to be very difficult. It's like trying to land a plane in the dark with no lights and no radar on your system as well.
Yeah. Brian Chung at Yahoo Finance on the phone for us, and Gina Smilek at the New York Times. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Guy.
Have a nice weekend. On Wall Street today, we have come mercifully to the end of a topsy-turvy week. Details, numbers, all y'all know the drill, right? Okay, that was a lot of Fed, so let's change gears here for a second and do some real estate. There is a lot to consider when buying a house. Prices, yes, of course, but also the softer stuff like commute times, should you have to commute, and whether the place has enough room for you. For families with kids, there are some other things to think about. Schools, and can they afford a good school district, right? Office space, access to parks, maybe. And those things, they come at a price premium. Home prices are going up everywhere, right? But they are going up faster in neighborhoods that are considered family-friendly. Marketplace's Amanda Petra has that one.
Marcia Brookie and her husband have been hunting for a house in Phoenix for about 6 months. They've been in a rental all that time, hoping prices would drop. But they've only gone up.
We're starting to feel stressed.
Her two kids have strong feelings about where they live.
They need to be close to their friends, and we really want to try not to take them away from their school community at this point.
But Brookie says most houses near their school go on and off the market before she and her husband even have a chance to get a showing. Richard Green with USC's Lusk Center for Real Estate says the low inventory is in part because many empty nesters are not selling and downsizing.
So normally the stock that would be freed up is not being freed up for families.
This demand means that home prices in family-friendly areas are going up even faster than the rest of the market. That's according to an analysis from Zillow. Vivek Shah with the Lead Center for Real Estate at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, says some first-time buyers are being priced out.
You're talking about a much higher down payment requirement, and that's kind of increasing by the day.
And so are the number of young families looking to buy, says Nicole Bouchot, an economist at Zillow.
We're going to see the most number of millennials aging into their prime home buying years, starting at age 32, over the next 2 years.
She says that's going to lead to even more housing demand in kid-friendly zip codes. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
Coming up.
We're holding it together, but we don't want to do it forever.
Oh, I hear that. Believe you me. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 21 points today. Not quite a tenth of 1%. Seems like almost nothing after this week, huh? 35,089 for the blue chips. NASDAQ picked up 219 points, almost 1.6%, 14,098. The S&P 500 climbed 23 points, about 0.5%. Finished at 4,500 on the button. For the week, the Dow added 1%. The NASDAQ gained 2.4%. S&P 500 pocketed 1.6%. While shareholders of Meta were licking their wounds yesterday, social media rival Snap, that would be Snapchat, right, reported its first quarterly profit ever and 20% more users than a year ago. Shares in Snap climbed 58%. You heard that right, 58%. Pinterest beat estimates too, picked up almost 11.2%. After the bell yesterday, Amazon reported revenues from its cloud computing division were up 40%, shares up 13.5%. Oil, the highest it's been in 7 years, which of course helped oil and gas stocks. ExxonMobil gained 2.5%. Halliburton up 2.3%. And oh, by the way, bonds, thank you for asking. Bond prices down. Yield goes up when that happens. The 10-year T-note, 1.91%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Back to jobs we go because jobs. People need them. The economy needs them. Just jobs. Anyway, we learned this morning, as Gina said, that average hourly earnings last month almost 6% higher than they were January a year ago, a sign that companies are competing to get workers, right? And honestly, they better. We've told you about the record number of job openings in this economy and the record number of people quitting their jobs to get better ones, which means not only is it harder to find workers right now, it is harder to keep them. So some companies, as Marketplace's Sabri Benishore reports, are getting creative.
Sometimes it's the little things that companies do that really stay with employees.
A banana stand where people could grab bananas.
Monogrammed golf umbrellas.
So a $15 holiday bonus check.
Yeah, that was 15 as in $15. That was tech worker Kevin Chen in Seattle, teacher Mark Procopio in Baltimore, accountant Brent Davis in Columbia, Missouri. Bananas and golf umbrellas didn't quite cut it. They all left those jobs. These days, companies have to try a little harder and do things that are revolutionary, like
actually to pay higher.
That's Alex Alonso with the Society for Human Resource Management. The number one reason people left their jobs last year, according to their research, is money. And that is what companies have been offering. At first, for new hires.
Opening offers were higher than ever before.
Two-thirds of companies surveyed this year said they have raised starting wages over the past year. And of those, about 40% say they raised starting pay for new people by 6 to 10%. And then when existing employees looked at that and were like, are you kidding me? They got raises too. Julia Pollack is chief economist at ZipRecruiter.
Wage growth picked up faster for job switchers than for job stayers. It's now picking up quite rapidly for job stayers as well.
For hourly workers, by December of 2021, job switchers were being paid 5% more than the year before. The people who stuck around were being paid 4% more. This year, according to the Conference Board, businesses plan to raise pay by an average of 3.9%. And if people still leave, well, the next best thing is to try and lure them back. Alex Alonso at the Society for Human Resource Management says about 40% of employers are paying something called boomerang bonuses.
So let's say I'm Johnny from XYZ Corp, and I know that Sally left. I'm going to go ahead and see if I can poach Sally back, and I'll get a bonus, but then Sally will get a bonus as well for coming back.
The second and third main reasons why people leave work are work-life balance and career advancement, and companies have been coming up with new benefits that hit exactly those things.
We have certainly seen an increase in interest in on-site childcare.
Stephen Kramer is CEO of Bright Horizons, which helps employers with benefits, including childcare. Companies are offering help with education for workers who want to get ahead.
We're also seeing student loan debt repayment as an important component.
Some of this competition over salary and benefits is tied to the tight pandemic labor market. But even when the labor market is back to normal, businesses are still going to be dealing with high turnover. That is a warning, and it comes from Brian Kropp, chief of research at Gartner's HR practice.
So if historically you had about a 10% turnover rate, you should really be planning to have about a 15% turnover rate, all else equal, once we get fully through the pandemic.
That is a 50% increase in turnover rate, regardless of what the labor market is doing. And there are a couple of reasons for that. A lot of remote workers have the whole country to choose from, or at least somewhere they can get to every once in a while.
And more options means more turnover.
Kropp also says social ties between coworkers can be weaker when more people are working remotely.
It's easier to quit your job because you're quitting your company, but you're not quitting your friends.
Plus, turnover has just been increasing over the decades in general. Glassdoor looks at best places to work each year and says the places that are likely to retain people have something in common. Christian Sutherland Wong is CEO of Glassdoor.
Each of these companies truly has a culture of caring about culture. They create a culture that's mission-driven, that they connect with their employees in being able to give them a sense of purpose in the work they're doing.
So once the bills are paid and the kids are fed, that's what companies may just be competing over next, a sense of purpose. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
Brewster County, out in the way west part of Texas, is the biggest county in that state by area. A whole lot of it, of course, rural. And as in much of rural America, healthcare is a limited resource in big parts of Brewster County in normal times, more so now, since there is actually some doubt there about whether an ambulance is going to show up if you call 911. Local governments are, of course, working on that, but as Marfa Public Radio's Travis Bubenik reports, building an EMS crew from scratch out in rural Texas is way, way easier said than done.
Jessica Scudder, a native of small-town Alpine, Texas, had a pretty unique childhood.
I grew up around ambulances. For a very long time, the ambulance office was our house.
Her father, Mike Scudder, ran the town's only ambulance company for decades. But after he recently died, the company closed up shop. So officials here are now trying to answer an urgent question. Who's going to respond when somebody calls 911? One of the people working on that is Greg Hennington.
This is our EMS station here.
Hennington's the Terlingua EMS and fire chief. He shows me around the emergency services building in Terlingua, Alpine's neighbor by West Texas standards, but still a good hour and a half away.
So we've got four full-time EMS personnel, plus myself, so there's five of us.
EMS crews in this rugged part of Texas cover a lot of ground. Brewster County alone spans 6,200 square miles of Chihuahuan Desert terrain. Hennington's small ambulance team used to cover just the southern half of the county. Now, since the other crews shut down, they're covering the whole thing.
And we have put a limit on it because it is stretching us pretty tightly.
Hennington, who's currently running for local office as a Republican, has told officials he's down to help out until the end of April. He's now leading a task force focused on finding a new ambulance provider for the county's northern half by that deadline.
There is an urgency to get this done. You know, we're we're holding it together, but we don't want to do it forever.
The task force is trying to pick between a couple options. The county could start its own ambulance service, or officials could try to recruit a new private company. But EMS experts say there's not much incentive for companies to move into new rural areas.
Yeah, it's I wouldn't say it's the best business model out there.
Brent Smith heads up the trade group Texas EMS Alliance. He says ambulance providers get paid every time they transport somebody. So companies in sparsely populated areas just can't make enough trips to turn a profit.
If there's a local governmental entity that's thinking about, well, we're going to have to fill a void, they just need to come to the realization that it's not a lucrative business and they're going to have to spend some money to do it.
Starting an ambulance service isn't cheap for anyone. In Texas, grants and state funding can help, but the state trade group says ambulances cost about $125,000. Hiring's a challenge, too. EMS crews across the country are struggling with pandemic-related burnout and staffing shortages. It's such a problem that Texas lawmakers recently allocated about $22 million for EMS recruitment efforts, particularly in rural and underserved areas. Despite the challenges, the county's top official, Democrat Elias Arcano, has promised at public meetings that there won't be a gap in ambulance services.
That'll never happen. We'll figure out a way to keep the ball rolling.
The county's task force is leaning toward the government-run ambulance provider option, but officials haven't reached a final decision yet. In Marfa, I'm Travis Bubinick for Marketplace.
As final note on the way out today, more jobs news of a sort, I guess, in my inbox this afternoon. This item from the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve Board on Friday, the press release said, named Jerome H. Powell as chair pro tempore, pending Senate confirmation to a second term as chair of the Board of Governors. Powell's term expires tomorrow. He is not going to get voted on for that second term for another 10 days. So let's hope nothing bad happens, right? Oh, also, Powell turned 69 today. So there you go. All right, we're going. Here is your moment of economic context. Oil. I know this makes it twice this week, but oil is in pretty much everything. U.S. West Texas Intermediate, our benchmark, $92 a barrel at the close this afternoon in New York. Keep an eye on that. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager around here. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's a speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.